Hi, I'm Haley B. Miller, and this is Ohio Politics Explained, a podcast where you give us 15 minutes and we give you all the news you need to sound smart and impress your friends. Welcome to Ohio Politics Explained, the As Ohio Goes edition. Today, we're talking about Ohio's role in the 2024 presidential race and why it looks a lot different than it used to. I hope y'all are ready to get a little nerdy. Up until 2016, Ohio picked the president in every election except five, according to OhioElectionResults.com, which, as a side note, if you're into this kind of thing, that's a super helpful website. And in these elections, the final tally never strayed far from the national results. In 1984, for example, 58.9% of Ohio Republicans voted for Reagan. That's compared to 58.77% nationally, which is a 0.13 difference. Basically, Ohio was in lockstep with the rest of the country. A 2012 Washington Post headline read, quote, "Why Ohio is the most important state in the country." This made the Buckeye State a prize for presidential candidates, and they campaigned here a lot to make sure voters knew that.
Hello, Buckeyes! OH! 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 Ohio! Oh, I love Ohio. I love Ohio.
But 2024 is a different time. Ohio is no longer really a battleground state, and the nominees for each party will be set by the time our March 19th primary rolls around. And once the general election cycle officially kicks off, it's unlikely that Trump or Biden will be here super often. To explain how we got here, I've brought in Kyle Kondik. He's an Ohio native who works at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics, and he probably knows more about Ohio politics than most people. Welcome to OPE, Kyle.
Thanks for having me.
So let's step back in time for a little bit. Why was Ohio such a big deal for presidential campaigns back in the day? Like, how did we always seem to pick the president?
So if you go way back to, you know, the modern history of our two-party system, Democrats and Republicans, goes back right before the Civil War. So you can sort of look at that as the, you know, our current party system in the United States, which is, you know, more than 150 years at this point. And if you look at how politics was decided and how elections were decided, particularly after the Civil War, the electoral map kind of looked a lot like the Civil War map. You know, the South was Democratic, the North was Republican, you know, just like the North was the Union and the South was the Confederacy. And the states that were sort of somewhat southern and somewhat northern were kind of the battlegrounds. And so, like, Ohio was a big battleground. Indiana was a big battleground. Illinois was a big battleground. New York State also was, just in part because it was the biggest state in the Union. And also, New York City actually was just sort of ancestrally Democratic and was actually kind of like pro-Confederate in some ways during the war. So, but you know, bottom line was that, you know, Ohio had a, and this has always been true of the state, Ohio had a sort of a mix of North and South, and so that made it into a battleground. And then over time, the state kind of changed the way that the nation changed. There was a you know, great migration of Black Americans from the South who moved north, and many of them ended up in big cities and increased the Black population of a lot of the industrial North states. You know, you saw that happen in Ohio. Also, when you had different waves of immigration, for instance, like in the late 1800s, early 1900s, there was a lot of immigration from like Eastern Europe and Southern Europe. So like, you know, Italians, et cetera. And you saw that in Ohio, just like you saw it like in the Northeast in the United States. And so that also, those kinds of voters and their children, grandchildren, you know, they changed the way that the nation changed in terms of the electorate. And so, you know, one of the big realigning moments in American political history was the coming of Franklin Roosevelt and the great, you know, after the Great Depression and the rise of the New Deal. And what you see is that from FDR's first election in 32 to FDR's second in 36, some of the kind of ancestrally Democratic places that had been loyal to the party since the Civil War started to kind of fade away because they were rural and conservative and they didn't really like the New Deal. So a lot of places that were sort of immigrant heavy and industrialized and labor friendly became very, very Democratic. So like that's when you can really date back to like Youngstown and Mahoning County and Cleveland and Cuyahoga County becoming like super Democratic. And that remained the case for decades after. And then what you sort of start to see is that in the past couple of decades or even longer than that, the Democrats have slowly been losing their grip on white working class voters, you know, white voters who don't have a 4-year degree. Democrats continue to sort of punch above their weight with white working class voters in the Midwest, including Ohio, really up until 2016. And then Donald Trump comes along. He sort of changes the orientation of the two parties. He kind of adopts some Democratic messaging on trade and other things. And states that have high white working class populations and don't have, you know, above average percentages of white voters who do have a 4-year degree, and Ohio is in that camp, a lot of those states kind of trended more Republican. So much of the Midwest did that. And Ohio already was a little bit more Republican than several other states in the region, like, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. So, you know, Ohio goes from voting for Obama by 3 when he won by nationally by 4 in 2012, to voting for Trump by 8 when he was losing the popular vote by 2, and then voted for Trump by 8 again when he'd lost the popular vote by 4.5 in 2020. So it was that sort of, you know, last bit of, or most recent bit of realignment that has moved Ohio off of its traditional position at the center of the presidential electorate.
So it sounds like, I mean, was Trump sort of the moment then, or was the writing on the wall a little bit leading up to the 2016 election?
I think you could maybe argue that you could maybe see it coming, that there were some signs of the sort of erosion, and you could see it in Eastern Ohio even before 2016. Like, you know, we think about like Youngstown and Warren as being, you know, these Democratic hotbeds that just aren't anymore. And they, you know, they fell away from the Democrats in 2016. But if you go, you know, further south in Eastern Ohio, and you also look at places that, you know, have this sort of legacy of immigration and like heavy industry resource extraction. So like, Steubenville, St. Clairsville, you know, down the border with Pennsylvania, West Virginia. You know, those places also were really Democratic for a long time, but they fell away in like in the Bush years and the Obama years, and now are like super, super Republican. So some of this may have happened anyway, but I think Trump kind of exacerbated the trends. And, you know, Democrats had also been gaining, you know, nationally a bit with white voters who do have a 4-year degree and gaining in the suburbs. You can kind of go back to like Bill Clinton with some of that. Well, Trump kind of dialed that up too. You know, sort of pushing those voters away from the Republican Party. So, you know, you could argue that maybe it would have happened anyway, but I think that the Trump election is where you really look at where the shift like really occurs. But also, even like if you go back and look at the, you know, go from 2004 to 2008. So, you know, in 2004, John Kerry is losing the national popular vote. Bush was the last Republican to win a popular vote by about 3 points. And then it shifts to Obama by 7.5 nationally, which is kind of a landslide in our modern politics. But there's a whole swath of the country that essentially covers what you'd consider to be kind of like greater Appalachia. And there are large swaths of that kind of territory in eastern Ohio. And a lot of those places, and actually the Youngstown and Warren areas are part of that sort of extended region. Obama, those are places where Obama did worse than Kerry, or at least didn't improve on Kerry. And that's in the midst of the country getting basically like 10 points more Democratic. So it was like relative to the country, a lot of those places either got less blue, got redder, or kind of stayed the same. So that was sort of, that may have been sort of a canary in the coal mine too, that, so many places got bluer in, you know, when Obama came along, and the Mahoning Valley did not, and much of Eastern Ohio did not either.
Yeah, that makes sense. So one thing that's really struck me about this primary cycle is that it's basically over, right? I mean, we are heading toward a Trump-Biden rematch, but I was curious, like, when you look back at the days where Ohio really was a battleground state, how significant was our primary? I mean, were we ever sort of early enough in the process, or was the primary process different in a way that Ohio was really proactively deciding who the nominees would be?
I don't know if I'd go that far. And, you know, it's always dependent on the year itself. You know, there was a time where presidential nominations seemed to be decided like pretty early in the process, and Ohio was, you know, rarely, if ever part of that. But in recent years, the state has had some memorable primaries. I mean, I think when John Kasich won the state in 2016 against Donald Trump, obviously Ohio ended up being a huge outlier in that election. Because actually, I don't even think Kasich won any other states. Maybe he won a smattering, but obviously he was not even remotely close to winning the nomination. But Ohio, that was sort of an important moment, in that election, and it was a winner-take-all state that was contested right around the time that the Ohio primary is going to be this time in mid-March. I remember it was a big victory for Mitt Romney when he was trying to secure the nomination against Rick Santorum in 2012. The state got a lot of attention with the Obama-Clinton wars in 2008. So it's not like it's been ignored, but you don't think of states being like decisive bellwether states in presidential nomination fights, partly because the calendar is different every 4 years and the competitiveness of the race is different every 4 years. This time we have very uncompetitive races on both the Democratic and Republican sides.
Yeah. I asked this partially out of my own curiosity because I was in Wisconsin for the last presidential cycle. Very different vibes, obviously. How do you expect the Trump-Biden campaigns to treat Ohio this year? I mean, Trump is kind of a big fan of Ohio, but I'm not sure that coming here is the smartest use of their campaign resources.
You know, Trump has always focused a lot on Ohio, and he did see some activity in 2020. I actually remember, I think Biden was in Ohio either the morning of the election or the day right before the election. And there was some belief in 2020 that the state really was going to, was going to shift, that at least the margin would be smaller. And again, the margin was almost exactly the same. And again, that was sort of part of a theme in both 2016 and 2020 is that I think polling kind of understated Trump in the Midwest more broadly. You know, I would think that Trump will not completely ignore the state just because it's been his sort of his background to give the state attention. But, you know, obviously you're going to see, I mean, there are really seven states that I think are the focus of this election. There are the seven states that were decided by less than 3 points in 2020. And I think will probably decide this election too. And so, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania in the industrial north, Georgia and North Carolina in the southeast, and then Arizona and Nevada out west. Now, what you are going to see in Ohio, though, is a ton of investment in the U.S. Senate race.
Oh, yeah.
To the point where it's going to get, we've seen, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I mean, I think that both sides of those outside spending groups have booked like $60 billion plus on TV. So, and Democrats basically have to hold Sherrod Brown's seat in order to have a shot to win the Senate, barring some, some surprising developments elsewhere. So you're going to get almost like a, at least on television, you're going to get like presidential style investment for the Senate race. You know, there is at least a couple of House districts that probably should be competitive. Amelia Sykes' seat, which is one of the most competitive great battleground seats in the entire country, as it's drawn now, covers all of Akron, Summit County, and then it goes down to Canton. That's a very, that's like a Biden plus three seat, so pretty reflective of the nation. And then Marcy Kaptur's seat in the Toledo area, which is actually, she's only one of five Democrats who hold Trump one seat. And there's a kind of a messy primary going on there. But, so you'll see investment in those races. But again, it's not going to be, the presidential campaign is going to have a very light footprint in Ohio. Unless something changes dramatically. And if that's the case, then things are probably going badly for the Republicans because, again, Ohio's a state that Trump should win by 5 to 10 or maybe even more than 10 points.
Yeah. And I guess that leads me to my next question. I mean, is there any scenario in which Biden could maybe make some inroads here, maybe not win the state, but close the gap that, that 8-point gap that Trump has won the past couple elections?
I think it would depend on, first of all, whether the Democrats have actually hit their floor in a lot of the rural/small town counties, because it seemed like Trump had sort of maxed out those places in 2016, but he ended up doing better in many counties across the state, particularly in both eastern and sort of like northwest western Ohio. So can it get even worse for Democrats in those places? I actually think the answer is probably yes. I also think you could imagine the Mahoning Valley continuing to trend more toward the Republicans. So that's something to watch. But then it's a question of can Democrats squeeze some more out of the big urban counties, which they probably can. And then some of the suburban exurban counties, particularly around Columbus and Cincinnati, that are really still blood red. You know, Delaware, just north of Columbus, is getting more competitive. But I would think that if Biden were to seriously challenge for the state, he'd have to like win Delaware County and do a lot better in these suburban places. I think what you'd probably if Biden did win the state, again, it's pretty unlikely, but the pattern you'd see probably would be kind of reminiscent of the ballot issues we had in Ohio last year about abortion rights, in that a lot of those issues really did, you know, relative to their to how they usually vote in the state, a lot of those suburban / exurban counties were unusually slanted in the Democratic direction compared to how they usually vote. And that's also important for Sherrod Brown, who, you know, I think this race, Senate race, is a toss-up, although it's become harder and harder for the party on the wrong side of the presidential race in the state to carry that state for Senate. Brown is one of the last sort of crossover senators left. But my guess is that his coalition will look different in the past. You know, he's going to have to run ahead of Biden basically everywhere in the state, you know, to make up, you know, again, what we're thinking is, you know, probably like a, you know, 5, 8, 10, 12 point gap, something like that. But maybe you'll have to look really for improvement for Brown in places where he hasn't done well in the past, particularly in some of those suburban / exurban counties. So can he bring some of those voters who maybe voted with the Democrats on the abortion rights issue? Can he bring some of those people along? Now, he's not going to bring nearly all of, you know, or he's not going to bring that many of them along, because there are plenty of Republicans who are going to vote Republican this year who voted pro-choice in those statewide ballot issues. But the voting patterns might be different, because again, I'd expect Brown to do worse than he has historically in a lot of the rural and small town counties, particularly in eastern Ohio.
So, you know, we've been talking a lot about how Ohio isn't the battleground that it used to be, but I don't want our listeners, of course, thinking that their vote doesn't matter, because obviously it does. What do you see as Ohio's role in the presidential race this year and kind of the elections in general? You know, we talked about the importance of the Senate race.
Yeah, look, I mean, even in its much less competitive state, Ohio is still more competitive than most states are. And given the fact that these things can surprise us sometimes. Now, again, I think if Ohio is somehow voting for Biden, then Biden is probably winning pretty comfortably, like much more so than he won in 2020, which at this point is kind of hard to imagine, given that you could argue. I mean, I think the national presidential race is basically a toss up. But if you look at the polls right now, you could argue that Trump is favored. I'm not quite there yet, but you could certainly make that argument. But again, if Ohio is actually voting for Biden or is close, that does probably mean that Biden has really recovered to a great, you know, significant degree. But that doesn't mean, you know, people shouldn't vote or what have you. Again, the Senate race should be a real true toss-up, and there are, you know, other competitive races across the state. There are state Supreme Court races that, you know, I think are probably undercovered, but are, pretty important to how the state functions. Seems possible there might be redistricting on the ballot, which is another important issue, particularly after how convoluted Ohio's process was in 2021 and 2022. So, there are things to vote on. And look, I mean, you know, the other thing, and I know this sounds like kind of a goody two shoes, good government way of looking at it, but like, you know, if you don't participate, then you really kind of give up the right to complain. I mean, of course, people don't actually give up the right to complain, but you know, if you're going to care about this stuff at all, you got to participate.
Yeah, for sure. Agree 100%. I have been talking today with Kyle Condick. He's the managing editor for Sabato's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. You can follow his work there. Kyle, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And if you haven't already listened to it, be sure to check out our other special primary episode of OPE, where we dig into the state races, including the U.S. Senate race, the Ohio Supreme Court race, and everything else that will be on your ballot on March 19th. Ohio Politics Explained is brought to you by the USA Today Network Ohio Bureau. You can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, @OhioExplained.